So years ago, I was riding a subway in New York City. And something happened one day that isn't an altogether unusual occurrence on a New York subway. Two people got in an argument. And it was two men who clearly had a difference of opinion on a given topic. And as they continued to share their convictions and opinions, their voices grew louder and louder. And me and the other passengers began to grow gradually more and more uncomfortable. And to the point where I was starting to wonder if the tension was going to snap in some way. And just as this argument was continuing, a little girl comes walking down through the middle of the car, and her mother's with her, and she's in her school uniform. She was elementary school aged. And she was holding this basket with these tiny little paper mache flowers. And she was just handing them to people on the train. She handed one to me, and I took it, handed one to other people. These men continued their argument, yelling back and forth at each other. And eventually, she made her way to the two men. And it was as if their argument wasn't even happening. She just reached up to hand them a flower. And the first man looked kind of disoriented, a little confused, but almost instinctively, he reached down and took the flower. And then she reached over to the other man, extended him a flower, and he took it. And suddenly, the subway train was quite calm and quiet. The words ceased, the tempers cooled. The dissonance became resonance, and the silence was resounding. That girl was not on the MAX train on Friday afternoon. Thankfully, Taliesin Murden and Ricky Best were on that train. I'm thankful and I'm heartbroken that they literally gave their lives for the lives of two young women who were enduring verbal and emotional abuse for simply being who they are. Two women who, from all accounts, were complete and total strangers. And what reverberates in my heart is, why did those two men respond the way they did? What force resounded within them in such a way that they were willing to pay the ultimate price for two people they had never met? What did they instinctively know or see or feel in that situation and in the presence of those women that caused them to become courageous martyrs? This passage that we just read, both of them, are very familiar, not just to people within the Christian tradition, but to people far beyond it. In the words from John 14, Jesus saying, "I am the way and the truth and the life," have been used and at times misused and at times even abused over human history. And they've left many people over our history confused and wondering what they actually mean. Is Jesus the way to the experience of God? Or is Jesus in the way? Like the celestial gatekeeper. Or like the Black Knight in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. None shall pass. You're not getting to God unless you go through me. And then some people wonder, well, if Jesus is the way, isn't that way a narrow way? Jesus talks about following a narrow pathway. And then others say, but is it a narrow way that only a few find? Does living on the narrow way mean having a narrow mind? Or a walled-off heart? Or a constricted spirit? Is Jesus a truth that we can conceive of and possess, like a conviction or a philosophy? Or is Jesus more a truth that is meant to possess us? I think of Jesus when he's standing in front of Pontius Pilate. And Pilate asks that age-old question, which reverberates through our history. What is truth? And Jesus just stands there in silence. And that silence was resounding. Is Jesus the spiritual life for a faithful few in heaven, in the sweet by and by? Or is Jesus the fullness of life for all people in the here and now? I think of the words of the Apostle Paul when he says in one of his letters that life is Christ. And thinking along these lines, another question comes up. How did Jesus, being the way, the truth, and the life, become Christianity, the religion, being the way, the truth, and the life? Jesus says, no one comes to the Father or connects with the Father except through me. How have we in the Christian tradition taken that over the centuries to mean no one connects to our Creator except through our religion? How did we make that leap? And I wonder if it's one of those things that's seemingly innate as part of our human nature. Namely, that often it's easier to codify beliefs rather than embody them. It's easier to pontificate and legislate justice and morality rather than to live it. But Jesus did say here, I am the way, truth, life. Could it be that that way is a way of living? More so than a way of thinking or believing. That that truth is less a philosophy and more a person. And more personal. Is that life not the consigning of the faithful and the unfaithful, but the convergence of all that is loving, all that is truthful, all that is beautiful, all that is just, all that is hopeful, a convergence of all of that into one experience that engages and empowers all of creation and embodies and empowers that reality in a way that can empower us to embody it, knowingly and unknowingly. I mean, after all, if this isn't just a philosophy we sign off on, but it's a way of life, could it be that there are people walking around on this earth embodying this way of life who don't believe in God? Who've hardly ever heard of Jesus? And yet are living in such a way that they are embodying that spirit, that truth, that vitality, that hope. Could it be that we are created and empowered and called to live life in such a way that we recognize the truth of who we are, beloved, blessed children of God, and that we know whose we are? The one who made us, the one who knows us, the one who loves us. As I've said before, to recognize and embrace the truth that we are loved and we are loved.
on my 2,500 square feet.
And does that reveal to us and reveal through us the hope that is beneath despair, the love that is beneath fear, the resonance beneath the dissonance? And I wonder if when Jesus goes on to talk about that, people who recognize this and embrace it and live it out will do greater works, greater things that Jesus himself did. A phrase, by the way, that I just wrote off when I was a kid, because I thought, Jesus is Jesus and I'm me. How is that possible? And yet Jesus sees something in me and in you and in us that so often we don't see.
Total law and domination.
And could that phrase be his way of saying, I see more in you than you see in yourself, and I see more potential and possibilities for embodying this way, this truth, and life than you can recognize right now? Some have said that one of the manifestations of that is that the message of the good news of Jesus has spread across the whole world, something that did not happen in Jesus' lifetime. Others have made the insight that maybe it was not only that expansion, but also the expansion of our perceptions and our experience to see the ways that that truth in life manifest, that are of an infinite variety, that aren't attached to any one tradition or philosophy or religion. That this is a living, breathing reality. And how often that living, breathing reality is embodied unknowingly, as well as knowingly. Remember that parable that Jesus told, the sheep and the goats. And as he's speaking to one side of that picture, he said, you're blessed because I was hungry, I was thirsty, I was naked, I was in prison, I was in pain, and you came to me, you visited me, you cared for me. And what is their response? When did we care for you? When did we feed you? When did we comfort you? And that reverberates back in my soul to these words of Jesus, that I'm not just talking about the newest religion on the block. I'm talking about a much deeper and broader and more amazing and magnificent and unimaginable reality that you all are a part of. Do you know it? And then it makes me wonder that maybe those two dear men on Friday afternoon responded instinctually in a situation without even having to think about it. Because somehow, whether they knew it or not, they were connected into that resonance that's beneath the dissonance of that situation, of our lives, of our world. And they were empowered to act, to stand up for people they didn't even know, for the sake of the truth of those people, their value, their significance, their worth, being simply who they are. Maybe this is the truth that can set us free. At our Wine and Theology group on Friday night, we were having a discussion about truth and how we receive it and how we discern it, especially when we are bombarded with many things that aren't truth. And one of the people in the group used a beautiful image of a choir. But there are plenty of times, I know in my own musical experience, where you're singing in a choir and it's just not coming together. For one reason or another, the music's challenging, or people have come to rehearsal carrying in their burdens from the day, and they're just, it's hard to get into that space where they're really connecting with the music and with each other. And then, just as you feel like things are going to grow more and more dissonant, it comes together. And suddenly you're singing on the same pitch. And the reverberation begins to spread around the room, and it's something you can almost feel in your chest when a group like that is in tune, that the resonance is deeper and more powerful than the dissonance. And this person said it beautifully. He said, you know, in those moments where I've experienced that, I start to realize maybe where that phrase comes from that we use so often, that that has the ring of truth to it. Because that ringing was resounding and reverberating in the depths of his soul in a way that was beyond words that he could say or even the words that they were singing in that moment. How might we be more awakened, more attuned, more open to hearing that voice and feeling that reverberation that goes down deeper than all the stuff that gets piled on top of it, that says at the beginning of the day, in the middle of the day, at the end of the day, in the middle of the night, you are loved. And you are made of love. And nothing will ever change that. No limits will ever be put upon that or around that. And how might that reverberation resound up from deep within us and out of us in ways that surprise us, in ways that transcend barriers, in ways that break down walls, in ways that build bridges instead of erecting walls, that might even call us to risk our lives for the sake of that life.